Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand in the evil day, and having done all to stand, stand therefore, having your loins girt about with truth, and having on the breastplate of righteousness, and your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace. Above all, taking the shield of faith, wherewith ye shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked. And take the helmet of salvation, and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God. The sixth chapter of Ephesians, verses 13 through 17. From as far back as we can tell, even among primitive Stone Age humanoids and other sentients, the use of armor has been inextricably linked to the rise of civilizations. In fact, with very few exceptions, as with the slug-like Huts, there seems to be little to no evidence of space-faring species who do not don its own protective clothing. In some cases, armor was a necessity of life, like with the Jendai, who were a people with no skeleton, made up of only muscles and tendons, though they appear to perhaps have a skull with eye sockets, teeth, and jaw. In order to be able to use standard technology like ships and weapons, they would inhabit humanoid armor, which would act as an exoskeleton to contain their gelatinous bodies. In their case, they required armor not just for physical protection, but also to simply be able to interact with the wider galaxy in trade and commerce. Similarly, with Darth Vader, whose suit was also mounted with a life support system, which was necessity for his very survival. The roles that armor plays is multifaceted. In some cases, like with the Wookiees, the use of some forms of armor was almost strictly ritualistic, as with the Kashyykian ceremonial armor, and made mostly out of wood from the Rorschach tree. Still others, like the Mandalorians and their Tong predecessors, wore their iconic plating made out of Beskar iron, which served multiple functions as highly protective and functional, but also ceremonial, and still yet as a wider cultural symbol throughout the galaxy, signaling their warrior prowess. But as in the case of the modern Jedi, who preferred to avoid the use of armor whenever possible, as it restricted their agility and in some cases hampered their force powers, they would equip themselves with protective gear only when it was absolutely necessary. Their use of it was strictly practical. Obi-Wan Kenobi was known to wear armor, especially during his Clone War skirmishes. Some forms of protection transcended all of these categories, as they were biological in nature, like with the crustacean Savak species, which grew a chitinous exoskeleton that could resist blaster fire. The use of armor meant different things to different people at different times throughout history. To some, it was a vital part of their culture and religion. To others, it was purely practical, if not annoying ordeal. And still, to some, it was as natural as growing hair or fingernails.
You are listening to the Star Lores Podcast.
Why, you stuck-up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder!
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
Light armor.
Often made of woven materials or plastics, light armor was optimized for agility, flexibility, and ease of movement. While providing minimal protection for most blaster or blade attacks, it could provide enough insurance to save one's life, but likely would not prevent injury. The following are some of the most recognizable sets of light armor in the galaxy.
Blast Vest. During the Galactic Civil War, the Blast Vest was among the most affordable and widely used piece of protective clothing, especially among the Rebel Alliance. The armor itself would only cover one's torso, leaving limbs and head exposed, and could hardly stop a blaster bolt, making it a glorified utility vest. It was cheap, though, and had plenty of utility, as most were littered with pockets and holsters. Among the most commonly purchased brands was the MK-45 protective vest, manufactured by Coromandian PDS Incorporated.
Armored Flight Suit. More so of a category of pilot armor than a specific piece of protective clothing, all kinds of armored flight suits were donned by various armies. The people who used it the most were the TIE Fighter and Corellian TX-3 pilots. It was also utilized quite often by mercenaries and bounty hunters. The majority of armor in this genre was rather cumbersome, weighing in at 45 pounds on average, and not ideal for melee battles or shootouts. They were equipped with a breathing apparatus that held a small amount of oxygen that could keep a pilot alive in space for a short period of time while he awaited rescue.
Leather jerkin. Among the most primitive forms of armor was that of the leather variety. Many ancient cultures throughout the galaxy wore one form or another of this type. In all of the light armor category, leather is perhaps the least protective against modern weaponry. Notably, members of the Royal Naboo Security Force were seen wearing leather jerkins. This was perhaps traditional more so than it was for actual protection.
Imperial Light Armor. Perhaps some of the most protective in the light armor category, it was worn by Storm Commandos in black and Scout Troopers in white. Designed by one Dr. Nashiak Lalik, it was created with a blaster-reinforced polymer coating, which was able to withstand and even deflect blaster fire. The Storm Commando version of the armor could even evade sensor detection, making it ideal for covert operations. It was even infused with sound dampening technology, making it easier for soldiers to traverse over brush, making very little noise. The helmets were equipped with a myriad of abilities like ultraviolet night vision, binocular vision, comms, and multi-frequency targeting systems. Though the Empire never divulged the cost of the armor, presumably with its state-of-the-art design and technology, it was among the pricier light armors on the market.
Ichani Fiber Armor. During the Old Republic era, the Ichani were elite martial artists who were very keen on having a style of armor that would accommodate their melee and hand-to-hand skills, while still giving them considerable protection from weapons. The clothing was made out of thousands of nearly microscopic fibers that would be woven together to make plates. The plates would then be fit together to make entire pieces for a set. Among all the clothing type armors, Ichani fiber armor stood head and shoulders above the rest. This armor was steeped in tradition and skill by those who crafted it.
Bone armor. This was a cheap, if not free, alternative to having to purchase manufactured bodily protection. However, bone armor could, in some cases, be even more protective against blaster fire than some of the factory products on the market. Though it did require some skills to make, one could not simply find the rotted carcass of some megafauna, slap it on one's chest, and call it a day. It needed to be carved, formed, and fitted for the specific wearer. Because of this price tag, it was most often seen on the bodies of spacers, vagabonds, and criminals.
Sith trooper armor, often appearing in glossy red or silver color and a helmet which completely obscured the face. Sith trooper armor was created during the Mandalorian Wars by Republic General and Jedi Knight, Revan. Presumably, the word Sith was not in its name in its first iterations, as Revan had not yet converted to the dark side. This would be the name the armor eventually assumed during the Jedi Civil War. It was initially designed to help give soldiers who were fighting Mandalorians a more even playing field against their foes. The armor style went through many iterations over the century and was used in the Great Galactic War and New Sith Wars. Its influence was even seen millennia later in the Galactic Empire Stormtroopers and even Darth Vader's unique armor. Medium armor.
This armor classification was always trying to strike a balance between ease of movement and protection. Sometimes it was successful at this endeavor, other times not so much. Medium armor was much heavier than its light armor counterparts, but was protective enough that most types could deflect blaster fire, giving a combatant more leeway in full frontal assaults without losing a life or limb. It was not foolproof, however, and, like most light armors, was designed in separate plates which covered one's most vulnerable body parts, but would leave joints exposed.
Electromesh. The Nagai, a sentient humanoid species who resided in the unknown regions and rarely interacted with the wider galaxy, invented this unique armor. The black suit was enveloped in small energy cells that would make an energy shield around the wearer's body. Conceptually, it was not dissimilar to how shield technology works on spacecraft, with the ability to absorb blaster fire. Electromesh optimized for dexterity more so than most armors in the medium category, and is nearly light enough to be considered a light armor. And though you probably wouldn't find a Nagai on worlds like Coruscant due to their isolationist nature, they were happy to sell their armor to anyone willing to buy. It therefore would not be uncommon to run into someone wearing electromesh.
Camo suit. During the Galactic Civil War, Kresheldin Industries introduced this innovative piece of equipment, primarily sold to the Rebel Alliance, as well as mercenaries and bounty hunters. The suit was made of photoreactive fibers, a technology that had the ability to project light that was undetectable to most species, making its wearer either invisible or hardly noticeable, depending on their environment. In order to be maximally effective, the suit had to cover one's entire body. It was also mounted with a battery pack on the back. Metal plates were installed in pockets at various points throughout the suit, mostly protecting soft spots in the body.
Chitin armor. Not unlike bone armor, chitin protective gear was made out of biological materials, primarily the hard exoskeletons of insectoid and invertebrate creatures. Because every set of this variety came from a different body, they varied vastly in quality and strength. Some species, like the Salvax, had natural chitinous growth, which was strong enough to absorb blaster fire with relatively little harm, while many mercenaries and spacers made it their preferred armor of choice. It was often much more dense than bone armor, which made it more protective, but heavier and less agile, a trade-off many preferred. During the Galactic Civil War, one particular armorer by the name of Dak smithed an entire line of chitin, which was called Aklay armor.
Gensare armor. The Gensare was an order of Force users who blended both dark and light side elements of the Force. The name meant followers of the hidden truth in the Sith language, and many referred to them as Grey Jedi. A rite of passage amongst the Gensare was a construction of armor, not unlike how the Jedi would construct a lightsaber, making every set of armor aesthetically unique. It was constructed out of typical metal, but coated with a rare ore called cortosis. The element itself was not that strong, and was fibrous once it was melded on top of another metal. However, it had a property which would have an electromagnetic pulse when it touched a lightsaber, causing the saber to short out. This made it an excellent defense against both Jedi and Sith when they would occasionally engage in combat with them. Most of the time, it would be hard to tell if a Gensare was donning their armor because they would wear a cloak, which would obscure it.
Blast armor. Yet another invention of Kresheldine Industries. This armor designed specifically for Naboo security forces. Like the jerkin that was worn by the Naboo Royal Guard, it was also a leather armor. However, it was actually highly protective against blast, heat, cold, and projectile attacks. It was thickly padded with many layers of compact leather material, but was still light enough for combatants to be mobile. What made the armor special, though, was the exterior layer created from thousands of crushed crystals, which were turned into a semi-solid gel substance. This crystal material had the ability to diffuse blaster and sonic fire. Though not entirely eliminating a blaster bolt, it would significantly reduce its damage. Heavy armor.
By far heavier and stronger than light or medium varieties, heavy armor was designed for maximal protection and cared little or not at all in some cases for mobility. Troops who were sent out to be cannon fodder would most regularly be fitted with this cumbersome equipment. It was important for this armor to be maximally cover as much of the face and body as was possible, leaving little room for a stray blaster or piece of shrapnel to pierce an exposed joint or rib on the body. Though it was most often seen outfitted in frontline soldiers, it was not unheard of for bounty hunters or generals to be equipped with their own specialized set of heavy armor. Among the most common types of heavy armor was battle armor, which came in all kinds of makes and models, and its earliest developments were during the Jedi Civil War, circa 4000 BBY.
Clone Trooper Armor. Just prior to the Clone Wars, when Hugo Damask, Sheev Palpatine, and Sifo Dyas were raising the Grand Army of the Republic, their first order of business was to develop a state-of-the-art protective uniform. The first phase of Clone Trooper armor would be a precursor to many future renditions of the same basic format, from Katarn armor to Stormtrooper armor, which lasted beyond the end of the Galactic Empire. The components of the gear was a base layer body glove, which served as insulation to protect the wearer in all types of environments, hot or cold. Jango Fett was the primary consultant on the design, which consisted of 20 plastoid alloy plates that covered the entire body. It was not dissimilar to his own suit, loosely inspired by Mandalorian armor. Manufactured by the Kaminoans, production was made much simpler due to the fact that the entire army of clones to be outfitted were the exact same size, making a cost-effective economy of scale. Despite the clones themselves not being fans of the armor, referring to them as, quote, body buckets, they did have a number of life-saving innovations. The suits themselves were equipped with heating and cooling systems, air filtration, and could even withstand the vacuum of space for a short period of time. They could also easily be equipped with jetpacks, bacta tanks, and flamethrowers, among other things. Most clone trooper armor was mostly white with colored stripes on them, denoting rank or the unit they belonged to.
Katarn armor. This set was developed as part of the second generation of clone trooper armor, but for the elite clone commandos. It was named after the Katarn, an apex predator from the old world of Kashyyyk. Though made from the same materials as trooper armor, it was much heavier and bulkier, made with extra layers of reinforced materials, along with novel binding chemicals, making it even stronger. Every suit of armor was also equipped with deflector shields, a personal Bacta supply, and EMP resistance. It was also highly customizable. No two sets were the same, and would often be changed and modified in different ways by its individual users. There was also an alternative, slightly lighter, more maneuverable version, which came in black, called Night Ops armor. During the Clone Wars, this was perhaps the most expensive protective gear on the market, coming in at over 10,000 credits.
Stormtrooper armor. This was one of the final iterations of the plastoid body armor that began with the clone troopers decades earlier. By the time this suit had become standard issue, Emperor Palpatine had tightened his grip on the Republic, turning it into an empire. It was no longer clones only who could enlist in the Stormtrooper Corps, so the customization and modification of one's gear was no longer allowed. Stormtroopers were expected to look uniform, presenting an intimidating and united front against the Empire's enemies. The only distinctive that was allowed was a colored fabric pauldron, which denoted a unit's commanding officer. Unlike previous versions of the armor, it was condensed down to only 18 pieces, making it easier to produce and fit to its wearers. During the Galactic Empire era, there were rare variations of the armor. It came in camouflage for certain situations which called for it. But by and large, stormtroopers donned the all-white look. The armor survived in different forms with the Imperial Remnant and well into the 2nd century ABY.
Fenelar armor. The Fenelar were a race that rose to prominence many millennia prior to the Battle of Yavin. They were well known for their navy, which developed the first versions of Dreadnought-class warships and their armor. What made it special was their innovative use of the mineral known as Frick, which, when turned into an alloy, was able to withstand even a lightsaber. The added bonus was the weight and flexibility of the protection, as it had the weight of medium armor, but the durability of heavy armor. It was also outfitted with hidden knife compartments, visual assistance, and sensors that would warn the wearers of incoming danger. It had a dark metallic appearance and was intended to look intimidating. The Fenelar were eventually made extinct by the Mandalorians, and the armor fell out of favor, but the use of Frick carried on, especially in vibroblades and pikes.
Thanks for flying with us. Jordan here. Just wanted to let everyone know what's happening here at the Star Lores podcast. Star Lores is now on Discord. If you would like to join the Star Lores Cantina Discord server, you can find a link in the description or on any of our social media accounts. Reach out with a DM or email. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter by searching the Star Lores podcast. Go ahead and give our page a like and send us a message. You can also email at starlorespodcast@gmail.com. Send us your fan art, Star Wars collections, or fan fictions, and you may even get a feature on one of our pages or even the show. Don't be afraid to offer corrections or add to any of the topics that we discuss on the show. We are also on Patreon, so if you want to help us pay the bills, as well as get a few awesome perks like bonus episodes, access to the private Facebook group, or the VIP section of the Discord server, head on over to patreon.com/StarLores and sign up for as little as $1 a month. And finally, make sure to subscribe to us on your favorite podcatcher app or YouTube, as well as sending us a 5-star review on iTunes. This really helps us reach a wider audience. Enjoy the rest of the show. Welcome aboard the Millennial Falcon. This is Jordan.
And this is Christian.
We're just riding the waves of Kamino here. About to do a tour of the old Clone Trooper manufacturing facility.
Yeah.
Clone Trooper armor manufacturing facility, that is. So today we are doing our little essential guide to armor. I always love these kind of episodes. They're fun. Just all the lore behind all these different items and things you kind of come across in the stories, you know?
Yeah. And Star Wars armor is iconic.
Like yeah.
Stormtrooper armor, Mandalorian armor,
yeah.
Vader's armor. You know it. It's like a signature of Star Wars.
Yeah. And on that note, before we start getting all the angry comments and emails, you will notice there were some significant armor sets that were missing from this episode. Some iconic ones, as you said. But I realized going into this episode, if I included many of those other, I would say even more important armor sets, it was going to be much too long. So we will do an armor part 2, whatever we call that episode, yeah. at some point, and we will include Mandalorian armor.
We will come back to yeah. this topic. It's not forgotten or yeah. abandoned.
I just wanted to cover all like the a lot of the like smaller, lesser known armors, with the exception of the Clone Trooper,
Stormtrooper. Yeah. yeah,
obviously those are very well known, but.
But even they have lots of variants that I'm sure we can deep dive into.
Yeah.
Even on their own.
Like yeah, 100%. Types. We could. Yeah, it's. We may just have to do a Stormtrooper episode.
Oh yeah, well that's.
Yeah, like
we will be.
yeah. Anyways. Yeah. So just that's for clarification. If people are wondering why, you know, some of your favorite armors aren't there,
that would be it.
Yeah, we will cover those eventually. Just wait. In any case, I wanted to just make some honorable mentions. I wasn't able to fit every single set of armor that ever existed. There were some that I was kind of on the fence about, are we going to include this or not? And there's also problem with like a lot of the video games, because like you want to equip yourself with armor. So they make all this they just invent these armors in the game
yeah.
and don't really do elaborate any backstory
much on them.
Yeah. There's no lore attached to the armor really.
Yeah.
So you get tons of armor sets that are just like almost throwaways, right? Like you never see them again other than in the video games. And I get it. You want to like equip your character.
Yeah, you need variety.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
With the exception of something like Star Wars Commando, like the armor in that game was very elaborate and like detailed and spelled out. But other armors, like especially in the KOTOR games,
yeah.
it's just there's so many sets of armor, it's ridiculous. And they just like
one sentence.
Yeah. Like. So anyways. Did want to some again? I was kind of on the fence, like the Sinigar war armor, the Mandalorian combat suit too, which is interesting. It's not the same as like
Mandalorian
the typical
armor.
Mandalorian armor. It's like a cheaper light armor combat suit. That was an interesting one. Achani light armor. But I think for the Achani, the fiber armor was like more common than the light armor, which was actually like plates. Whereas the fiber armor was fiber, right? So, the Zabrak combat suit, Mara Jade's armor is also, interesting one. Padded flight armor. And then I did mention, this may be a little correction. I did mention, so the Hutts did not really do armor, but there was a period in their history where, funnily enough, they seemed to be a lot smaller or maybe in better shape. I don't know. You'd be the judge. But they actually did have a body armor and they would actually like fight in war in like hand-to-hand combat and stuff.
Yeah.
So there was a Hutt body armor, but I think that wasn't a very big part of their history or a very long period of time they were wearing armor. You know, by the time they got other people to do their fighting for them.
They were a very warlike species for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
And they did have their own conquests, which is something not a lot of people know. They are scary in close combat. They move faster. They are stronger than people give them credit for. But yeah, over time they became very docile and let other people fight for them and lazy and what's the word? There's another word I'm looking for. Hedonistic.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah. Another kind of cool armor was I just go look this up online, the JX4 Gladiator prototype. It's sort of an interesting, powerful armor too, mostly worn by bounty hunters and such. So Durasteel armor. I did want to bring up, again, this was something, the problem with how this is like classified. So Durasteel is actually like, it's a metal. Right. There isn't a armor called Durasteel armor.
It's just armor that happens to be made of
Durasteel. So Jango and Boba Fett, their armors were Durasteel.
That's a point of contention that we'll probably revisit in the future. But yes, that has been stated. Okay. Yes.
Some of Darth Vader's armor was Durasteel. Lots of bounty hunters use Durasteel armor, right? Like it's a common
material,
but that doesn't classify the armor that person's wearing.
Saying I wear steel plate armor. It's like, okay, which century, what country, like in real life, right? Like,
exactly. So I did want to bring up like Durasteel is obviously, it's like a very important in the armor category as a whole, but there isn't like a
Durasteel armor set specific.
A standard. And that was even a tough thing with some of these armors, like the battle suit or the battle armor. What did I call it? Battle suit. Battle armor. So battle armor is like a whole category in and of itself. Again, it's a heavy armor, but it's also a category. Like stormtrooper armor is technically battle armor. Same with clone trooper armor. Yeah. And
even Mandalorian armor can,
it is
a battle armor. Right?
Exactly. But there is like kind of, I guess like different companies in the Star Wars universe have just created their own generic battle armors, which look similar from the pictures I'd seen look similar to like clone trooper armor. They're not like totally dissimilar, but they're not exactly the same. But that also segues somewhat into another thing that I wanted to bring up, especially with stormtrooper armor. How is this a heavy armor again? Like, how does Princess Leia's little blaster pistol completely wipe out a stormtrooper?
This is something that this whole episode was built on in my mind. It's something I hate about the depiction of stormtroopers generally specifically their armor.
Yeah.
Especially it's been a huge problem in later iterations with the Disney canon. I have a whole rant here, so brace yourself.
Do it.
The stormtrooper armor appears to be incredibly weak and downright useless.
Like plastic, right?
Yeah.
Like that's how it's...
And it's not...
I mean, in real life, it is plastic.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't be portrayed as plastic.
Yeah, so it, some kind of offenses. So you mentioned Princess Leia. She is noted to have to use a heavy blaster pistol. So in theory, that's like getting hit with a higher caliber round. Some body armors aren't necessarily rated for higher caliber rounds.
Yeah.
So you can almost excuse that. There's also comments made about like, well, when you get hit with a blaster bolt, it doesn't necessarily kill you. Maybe it just knocks you out. So something a lot of people don't realize, movies are a lot to blame for this. If you get shot in real life and you're wearing body armor, depending on what body armor that is and the caliber you got hit with and all that fun stuff, a lot of times it still hurts you pretty bad. Underneath the plates, like you could have crazy bruising. It can definitely break bones.
Yeah,
if you get hit in the head, it can knock you out. If it didn't penetrate your helmet, which you're pretty lucky if it didn't, but there's documented cases, right?
Really body armor is there to save your life. It's not there to like
make sure you shrug off the round
stop you from harm.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, now, and again, depending on all kinds of factors about like the range and caliber that you're hit with, you could in theory shrug off a round or it could knock you down or knock you out.
Right.
So with that in mind, it stands to reason that with like stormtrooper armor, you're not necessarily dead when you get shot, but maybe you're just knocked out.
Yeah.
Some trooper comes by and recovers your body. You come back to life, but you regain consciousness and you get taken care of medically after the fact. All that's possible, right? So not necessarily all the people that get shot in Star Wars that you see on screen necessarily are dead. So there's that. This kind of falls off the tracks when you kind of hit Return of the Jedi, when you're having Ewoks taking out stormtroopers with rocks. So then you got to start asking yourself, okay, like you have Stone Age technology being hurled at the supposedly menacing advanced military force. Now, to be fair,
even almost knocking over AT-STs.
Some pretty powerful rocks on Endor. To be fair, you can get hit. Like, again, armor doesn't, you don't just shrug things off. So people wear hard hats on construction sites. They're just made of plastic. Yeah. Again, can save your life. Doesn't mean you're not going to get a nasty neck injury if you have a heavy weight dropped on your head, right?
Right.
So you could, in theory, make that argument. We go into the Disney era, and you have shows like Rogue One and The Mandalorian, where stormtroopers are engaged in... And so the other question, too, is the distinction of getting shot and what armor is meant for, right? So maybe blast armor is better against getting shot rather than melee combat. So this is where it gets way off the rails, in my opinion. Rogue One, you have some pretty egregious offenses with... it's been a while since I've watched the show, the blind monk.
I don't remember his name.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. But I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, he uses a staff to take out stormtroopers.
Right.
And man, it has been a long time. The main girl.
We reviewed it not too long ago.
I know, but it's still like, it's one of my better, his favorite Star Wars.
Jyn Dar.
Jyn Erso. Yeah.
Jyn Erso, yeah.
She takes out stormtroopers using like essentially a nightstick or like an extendable baton.
Yeah.
Hitting clones in the face and then again in melee combat. And it's like, okay, at this point, it doesn't, It shatters. The armor shatters. And same in The Mandalorian. Boba Fett, cool character. Love Boba Fett. He should be able to outdo anyone in hand-to-hand combat. But the way he's taking out stormtroopers, like you're seeing helmets shatter on impact.
Yeah.
Where it looks very much like plastic.
Yeah.
So if you're getting people taken out in melee combat, and then Obi-Wan, the Obi-Wan series, another offensive title all on its own, but you have a character who's unarmed, slap a stormtrooper in the side of the head and that like stuns him. And then she tugs on another stormtrooper's like front of his helmet and he's like discombobulated by it and allowing her to grab it with one of their sidearms and kills him with it. So at that point, your armor is actually like impeding your ability to fight, which makes it absolutely worthless. And I think from Rogue One on, it became especially egregious where you have like people taking out like, the minimal thing.
It's always been pretty bad, though.
But I'm just saying it's gotten so so much worse. It's almost kind of like laughable because, again, like at this point, why are you even wearing it? Yeah. You're better off just not even wearing armor.
Yeah. So, and I was looking at some of like the scenes in the Clone Wars, and the clone troopers are like even their armor is actually depicted as protective.
Yeah.
But it's like it's like almost the same armor, just like a previous generation of it. Yeah. How does it get so much worse?
Yeah. So a lot of that I chalk up obviously to plot armor, which is the strongest kind of armor there is for the story to progress, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I think stormtrooper armor is supposed to be better than how it's depicted, let's say, in a lot of media. And on paper, at least, it's...
So here's my problem, kind of what surprised me in researching this episode is like, again, I didn't realize stormtrooper armor was a heavy armor for one. And then the other thing was that like there's actually all this lore and stuff written about even in the Essential Guide to Weapons and Armor, it's written about stormtrooper. It talks about how like state of the art and high tech it is, and like really you really get an idea of something that is like completely not true in the film depictions of the armor, right?
And like, it's the same thing with the whole stormtrooper.
Like completely incoherent.
Yeah, like their menacing reputation, right? Like they're supposed to be elite, ideologically driven warriors,
right?
And on screen, they're bumbling.
Yeah,
get red shirts. I get taken out. They've always by the heroes
done dirty to the stormtroopers.
Yeah, well, we'll address that in our stormtrooper corps.
Yeah,
episodes. So yeah, that's a whole side rant. There are some things I will mention about real life armor as well. You know, not all armor is meant to be bulletproof either, but protects you from other hazards you might encounter. So things like shrapnel, concussive blasts, and then you even have, and like heavy objects falling on you and that kind of thing. And then even the utility of it's space combat, you do want something that might be a backup in case you do get exposed to vacuum.
Yeah.
Which a lot of the, especially the heavy armor does have, like oxygen redundancies and stuff. So to be fair, outside of combat, armor also serves like a functional purpose as well. So just thought I'd throw that in there.
Yeah, for sure. Couple other notes. So you were mentioning that the Kaminoans' design of the clone trooper armor, we all see it as white, but they see on the ultraviolet spectrum, which we don't. So the clone trooper armor is actually
looks different.
They're wearing a rainbow flag.
Well, we don't know what it looks like. It never indicates exactly what the Kaminoans see. Maybe it has like something like more, I don't know, tactical camouflage patterns on it, or who knows. But the Kaminoans see in the ultraviolet spectrum. So even things like their hallways and stuff aren't just bright white. To them, there's a lot more color and interest. Now, again, in a military setting, I don't necessarily think that their clones are, you know, multicolored, like anything goes, although they very well may be. We just don't know. Yeah. We never get an indication of what that actually does look like to them. And they do use colors that we can see, obviously, to denote things like rank and later kind of legion affiliation and stuff. So who knows where that kind of sits. Maybe it just looks similar, but just a little different in the ultraviolet spectrum. It's just never really shown. So just have to guess.
Yeah.
So if you want them to be rainbow colored, I'm sure that's fine.
just an interesting little out of universe point. So the Fenalar armor, the Fenalar species, in KOTOR 2, it is mentioned that you get the armor in KOTOR 2, but it's spelled Felinar. And the writers have since confirmed that this was a typo that made its way into the game, and all subsequent written materials on the armor have the correct spelling of Fenalar.
Okay, in case someone is doing this background checking of all our facts.
I just thought that was kind of a funny little how that got it, and why they wouldn't have just kept the word Felinar.
Yeah, you know, it's because no, it's spelled wrong.
I'm guessing they invented it in KOTOR, but maybe Fenalar existed pre KOTOR, and they just wanted to introduce that. I'm not quite sure. So
Star Wars also has a bad habit of when there is some kind of divergence, they spun it off into its own thing.
Yeah.
So it could have gone the other route where they're like, no, this is totally different than Fenalar armor. It's completely come up with a whole new backstory and everything for it. Yeah. So,
yeah, but actually, again, this is another, I would encourage people to go look up the pictures of Fenalar armor. Pretty cool looking, pretty menacing. All right. And I also wanted to mention that the Jedi actually at certain periods did wear armor as well, especially like way, way back in the day.
Yeah.
Like Jedi Guardians and stuff would almost always wear armor. But it kind of seems like especially by the time you get to the Jedi Civil War, they're like almost not wearing armor.
Yeah,
except for like Dark Jedi, right?
I think it has to do again with practicality, individual preference. Like you might have a Jedi who loves wearing battle armor or even needs to wear battle armor because their species needs it to survive.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you have open war situations like the Clone Wars. Lots of Jedi are wearing or parts of armor. So Mace Windu's wearing like clone trooper gauntlets, but he's not wearing the full bodysuit. Yeah. And Obi-Wan sometimes wears more armor or less armor. Same with Anakin. Just depends on the environment that you see yourself going into and kind of balancing out, okay, does this restrict my movement or my force powers and all that stuff too. Yeah. So that could also be a huge factor.
Yeah, exactly. I think there was a period of time where it was like standard for Jedi to or at least certain kinds of like Jedi Guardians to
wear it.
Yeah. And Jedi Guardians would rely less on force powers and, you know, more on just like brute force.
Combat ability.
Yeah, combat ability. So kind of makes a little sense, more sense that they would do that. But I do kind of wonder, this is just me thinking out loud, but like I wonder if kind of as time went on, the Jedi just like focused more on their lightsaber ability and using the force to protect themselves. As opposed to...
Yeah, and there could be ideological reasons too, where some Jedi might be like, no, it makes us look too much like warriors. We want to get away from that and be more passive or pacifist or appear more...
Or just neutral,
Or appear more neutral, less combative.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of elements that would go into that kind of decision, I think.
100%. Okay, before we moved on, what was your favorite armor in the episode?
Clone trooper armor by the widest margin. There's a lot of cool looking armor. I don't know if it's I like the armor because I like the clone troopers. Like what came first?
Yeah.
But I do have quite the soft spot for clone trooper armor and stormtrooper by extension. But
yeah, fair enough. I would actually have to say I really like the Jyn Sarai armor.
That looks
pretty cool.
Sick.
I almost want to cosplay it, but probably be pretty expensive cosplay. So, yeah, there's a lot of kind of lame armors too, but the blast vest.
It's just a utility vest.
Yeah, it's basically it's like a utility vest.
I will also say some things like the leather armors we mentioned.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like they're primitive and whatnot, but depending on the creature that you're taking the skins from, they could be quite protective.
Yeah.
So that's also a consideration to make
The Naboo also were pretty innovative with their leather armor. Like I mentioned in the scripted portion, they had this like down to a science, and they had this like crystal gel that was like lathered in that could diffuse blaster fire, right?
Yeah.
So, and that's like kind of an innovative way to use leather armor because it's not as expensive to produce the armor.
Yeah.
But anyways, just a correction. So we mentioned this species, the Jedi. They're an invertebrate species that wore like an armor exoskeleton. And I never came across them when I did the invertebrates episode. And now I'm like...
They're pretty significant.
Yeah, I'm like, oh man, there's
Dirge
so much...
Yeah, Dirge is quite well known.
Yeah, there's so much like to write about them too, right?
Yeah,
so
they'll definitely get their own episode anyways. And we did say in that episode that we will do our own episodes on some of those species.
Okay,
so.
Yeah.
Also, arguably, do we know if they don't... Oh yeah, they don't have a central nervous system. I know that. But I was going to say, if they have a skull, in theory, could they have something that's equivalent to a spine, possibly, even if it's like a little nub in the back of the skull? Who knows?
Well, that was also the weird thing, because they do have like eye sockets, almost like a bone.
And mouth.
And mouth. So it's like, you kind of suspend your disbelief a little bit.
Unless it's like a really, we're going off topic here, but like really tight muscles that like shape the face.
Yeah.
In theory, unless it's explicitly said, we'll get to this in a Jedi episode, which there are fans. I'm a fan of the Jedi.
Yeah.
Sort of. Okay. They're enemies of the Mandalorian. Well, at least Dirge's whole thing. We'll get into it later.
Did you want to mention that historical research correction or skip that?
We'll do it on another episode.
Okay. Yeah, we'll skip that then. All right. I just also, before we clock out here, I just wanted to give a big shout out to our two newest Patreon supporters, Jonas and Caden. Thank you guys so much. If anyone else wants to help support the show, you can go to patreon.com/StarLores. And for $3 a month, you can support the show. If you're feeling real generous, you could do $5.
Maybe you can get Jordan that Jyn Sarai armor.
Yeah, come on. If you're really hurting, there is a lower tier that is like pretty cheap and you can, you know, get all the bonus material. Anyways, we want it to be as accessible to as many people as possible. Follow us on social media. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Just look up Star Lores. And again, we're on Discord.
That never-ending plague.
Yeah.
I think the number one message we get is...
What's the Discord?
What's your Discord link? Link is broken. We apologize again profusely in every episode now. It's been...
this is just like our...
Standard.
Yeah, standard. Sorry about this. But it actually gets a lot of... There is a lot of engagement in the Discord server, yeah. So...
And I haven't been on there lately just because I've switched phones, so yeah. I do apologize for the recent dark... Going dark for a bit, but yeah. I plan to be back on.
Fair enough.
Shortly.
Yeah, so we do... it is worth it for us to keep... doing Discord just because there is actually people engaging on there, probably more so than our other platforms. So, but yeah, if you want that, do that. You can also email us, starlorspodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your fan fiction. If you got art, Star Wars art.
If you have a suit of Star Wars armor.
If you have a sweet suit of Star Wars armor, give it to us. Your Star Wars collection, send it to us. We want to post it on like Instagram and stuff. Yeah. Just repost like fan.
Build your street cred. Yeah. Star Wars street cred. Show us your Lego sets. Your, yeah. Whatever you got.
Even your book collection.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. Honestly.
Yeah. So yeah. Anyways, with that being said, I think that's it. Peace.